With 5 years to go before the Olympics begin, we're starting to hear the promises for a green, sustainable games are ringing hollow. Most of BC is still riding a wave of optimism, with visions of investment, development, and dollar signs dancing in our heads. With all that wealth, millions and billions flowing into our neighborhoods, surely some of it will trickle down to the little people. Some of that money will certainly soak in like a gentle spring rain, and the city will bloom for all of us, right? Well, no, the Olympics won't generate any money. They will redistribute money. Profits will be made, yes, but in the usual ways, through real estate speculation, driving housing costs up, profiting from cheap labor, driving wages down, resource extraction, taking our forests and minerals and selling them off wholesale. And there's foreign investment, guaranteed to bring in billions, but investors expect to get all their money back, plus a fat bonus, up to double the original amount. Who will be paying the piper? If you said all of us average Joes, you win the prize. Don't be fooled. There's nothing democratic about the Olympics. The 2003 referendum in Vancouver was an exercise in slick branding and high-pressure advertising. The Yes 2010 side outspent the No side by at least 10-1, and the rest of the province wasn't consulted at all, even though the whole province will be paying for the games. So many promises were made, they could fill an Olympic-sized swimming pool. And this is still the honeymoon phase of our Olympic marriage. Most of those promises haven't been broken yet. However, the Green Monkey has the power to see the future and the insight to understand the past. So we'll run down the analysis for you here and now. First, we have to point out, the Olympics are not about sport and young athletes. It's true that hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent on legacy arenas, skating rinks, Nordic ski runs, and so on. But at the same time, school athletic programs and community centers are being forced to cut programs, eliminate staff, and close down completely because of budget cuts. We haven't reached the end of those cuts yet, by the way. More belt tightening is on the way in future budget plans. The mega arenas will come too late for the athletes in school today. If you want to compete in 2010 for Team Canada, you'll have to search out places to train and practice, plus pay for all of your own equipment and clothing, travel to Olympic training events and overnight stays, and even the Olympic qualifying trials. Observers are already pointing out that given these obstacles, Canadian athletes don't stand much of a chance of winning the gold, even on their home turf. So the Olympics are not really about promoting sport. It's the mega corporations that benefit from huge media exposure, lucrative construction contracts, and sweetheart deals to privatize public services like the railroad and the new rapid transit line. TV and radio broadcast rights were sold to the Bell Globe Media Rogers conglomerate for over $100 million. Obviously, the Bell Rogers member stations will turn around and sell advertising to McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Ford, GM, and Coors Beer, the new owners of Molson Canadian. Corporations that can afford to spend millions for a half minute of airtime. And the stations will likely air more ads than sports. All those corporate sponsors, in turn, will rake in millions of dollars more from increased sales thanks to the media exposure. And where do those millions come from? The TV-watching, sports-loving general public. And most of us will be watching the Olympics on TV, just because none of us will have the cash for a ticket to attend any of the games in person. Those seats are reserved for the wealthy. Amazing, wonderful projects are being designed to serve the needs of the elite. The airport at Whistler, it turns out, isn't large enough for all the private jets that are expected. So land's being scouted in the Pemberton Valley for the new airfield. The new landing strips will be required to handle an influx of 737s, so if you move to the mountain valleys north of Whistler for the peace and quiet, forget about it. New 5-star hotel developments, executive-style condos, highways for the limousines, all these and more are ready to break ground. Now, the Olympic Planning Committee has also provided for fleets of buses to travel to and from the Games venues, but those will be used to transport the athletes. And housing for the athletes promises to be rather more Spartan than the hotels and condos under construction, like the Athletes Village to be built on Falls Creek, which includes amenities like primary sewage treatment. What's flushed down the toilets there flows into Falls Creek, where it tends to stay. Let's take a look at those athletes for a moment. Most Olympic contestants are men. The overwhelming majority of the CEOs and tycoons that make up the Vancouver Organizing Committee are also white men. Well, women were actually banned from competing in the Games for decades. The modern Olympics were founded by notorious misogynist Baron de Corbetton in 1896 with the words, "The Olympic Games must be reserved for men." Of course, those men and women who make their fame and fortune from the Games aren't exactly angels. Scandals like International Olympic Committee officials accepting bribes from prospective host cities, Olympic judges fixing scores and prearranging who will win the gold, not to mention doping scandals and revelations about pot-smoking snowboarders. But the only ones punished are the athletes. They get sent home in disgrace, stripped of their medals. So who's going to win the gold? Private contractors. The new gold rush is on for public-private partnerships, P3s. The public provides the funding, and the private contractors pocket the profits. The best part is the public can't even look at the contracts because of non-disclosure agreements. None of the details are disclosed until the deal is signed, and by then, it's too late to back out. This provision is meant we're the helpless victims of the classic bait-and-switch tactic. Promises to maintain the highest environmental standards and the least amount of disruption to the people who have to live here are cast away to the winds. P3s are compelled to seek out the cheapest option to maximize profits, so never mind accountability. We're already watching two P3 travesties unfolding. The RAV line, the Richmond Airport Vancouver Transit Line to the south, and the Sea to Sky upgrade to the north, which is a plan, design, build contract. In both cases, we were promised smoother transportation through tunnels. But tunneling is expensive, even if it does preserve the quality of life for folks to the south and environmental values to the north. In both cases, the great deals that were advertised got traded for cheaper, more degrading options over the objections of the people who are the most affected. Environmental degradation won't be limited to highways and rapid transit construction. Private jets and limousines contribute smog and greenhouse gases to the atmosphere. Ski runs and event courses are punched into virgin forest lands along with stadiums to hold thousands of onlookers in places like the Callahan Valley. Once old-growth forest is gone, it's gone for the rest of our lifetime, our children's lifetime, and their children's lifetime. That's the legacy of the Olympics. Outside the Sea to Sky corridor, from Vancouver to Whistler, other resort developers are inspired to carve out their own fiefdoms on nearby mountain ranges. The rush to develop Whistler and the spike in real estate values there has spurred on European and Canadian entrepreneurs to stake claims and draw up plans for their own mini Whistler resorts. Problem is, BC is all Indian land. The Vancouver Olympic Committee is negotiating with the Squamish First Nation, which claims Whistler and the surrounding area, including Vancouver, as its traditional territory. The Squamish Nation stands to gain significant and long-term benefits for its 3,000 members, mostly living on reserves in North Vancouver and outside the town of Squamish. The flip side of that is, if the Squamish Nation withdrew its support for the Olympic development on its territory, the government has a number of ways to conceivably punish the band, and the projects would likely go ahead, even without Indigenous support. Meanwhile, development proposals for Mount Chiam near Chilliwack, Melvin Creek outside of Lilwet, and Squawkwelt at Sun Peaks are going forward without consulting or accommodating Native people, as required by provincial court rulings. Some of those bands are resisting the illegal development by any means necessary, Recent uprisings at Chiam and Skokwekwa were put down by a massive show of police force. We can look forward to our own occupying force here in Vancouver in 5 years. We know huge sections of the city will be closed off with security barricades, and only those lucky enough to live or work inside the zone will be allowed to enter, and only with a special security pass. Anyone suspected of harboring terrorist thoughts will likely be picked up and removed for the duration. Coming crackdown on homeless people will make recent police operations in Vancouver look trivial. As we've seen at all previous Olympic Games, the streets will be cleared of undesirables. Thousands of people are homeless in Vancouver. Most of them will be rounded up. The government may propose letting them camp out in a park, but will likely settle for a containment strategy that keeps the homeless away from media and international visitors. Conversion of single-room occupancy hotels and skyrocketing rents will add to the city's homeless crisis. Although Vancouver City Council has passed a bylaw addressing conversion of low-income housing, it amounts to a tax on the developer, not a ban on the practice. $5,000 to a real estate baron is just a cost of doing business. The bylaw was sold to voters as a solution to prevent the dislocation of thousands more low-income people, including seniors and the disabled, like we saw here during Expo 86. Thousands were turned out of their homes and into the street, while Vancouver's biggest land barons made millions. Next time around, in 2010, the Green Monkey predicts the same scenario will play out, with the addition of a $5,000 kickback to the city for every low-income person evicted into a zero-vacancy landlord's market. So, to sum up, the top 10 reasons to burn the 2010 Olympics, we mean build underground resistance, not the 2010 Olympics. Here they are. The Olympics don't help athletes. They benefit mega corporations and the very rich. Public-private partnerships are screwing the public. The Olympics are sexist. The games are all about advertising, consumption, and television. The officials are corrupt. The legacy of the games includes environmental destruction, pressure on First Nations to give up land, a police state like our worst nightmares, and hundreds more people sleeping in doorways because all the shelters are full. In case you needed a reason to get riled up for the next 5 years, this is our call to start organizing now and burn the 2010 Olympics. For more info, you can send us an email at radioactivegreenmonkey@hotmail.com. And we hope to bring you more in the future about building underground resistance, not the 2010 Olympics.